This paid program may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to the Business of Government Hour, a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. The Business of Government Hour is produced by the IBM Center for the Business of Government, which was created in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. You can find out more about the center by visiting us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. And now, the Business of Government Hour.
Welcome to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host and managing editor of the Business of Government magazine. Today, NASA is facing significant operational changes, from retiring the shuttle program to transitioning to the next generation space transportation system for exploration beyond low Earth orbit. In seizing these opportunities and challenges, NASA continues its role as the nation's pioneer in space exploration, scientific discovery, and aeronautics research. To do this successfully, however, rests on the pursuit of an effective human capital approach and workforce strategy. What is NASA's human capital and workforce strategy? How is NASA tackling the human capital challenges it faces? And what is NASA doing to develop future leaders and pursue a strategic workforce planning approach? We'll explore these questions and so much more with our very special guest, Jerry Buchholz, Chief Human Capital Officer at NASA. Jerry, welcome to the show. It's great to have you.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really pleased to be here.
Also joining our conversation from IBM is Lori Feller. Lori, welcome.
Thank you.
It's always great to have you. So, Jerry, many of our listeners are familiar with NASA, but before we delve into specific initiatives, perhaps you could give us a brief overview of its history and continuing evolution. When was it created, and how has its mission evolved to date?
So NASA was created in October of 1958, and I think people are very familiar with the NASA history. It's part of our U.S. cultural history. Through the Gemini program, the Apollo program, and the Space Shuttle program. And as your listeners probably know, the Space Shuttle program ended about a year and a half ago. And at that time, people were sort of wondering if there was really a future for NASA. So one of the things that I'm pleased to say today is that indeed the future for NASA is quite bright. We are currently working on the James Webb Telescope, which is a very, very long-range telescope that's being built. We are also working on the new Orion vehicle, which will take astronauts past the moon, and the SLS rocket to launch that. And I think of great interest always is the fact that we have astronauts living and working on the space station 365 days a year. One of our astronauts, Kevin Ford, just returned this past week, and another is about to launch soon. The launch schedule is on the NASA website, so I encourage people to go ahead and go look for that and watch the launch live on NASA TV.
So with such a critical and broad mission, how is NASA organized? What's the size of its budget, number of FTEs, and geographical footprint?
So currently we have about just under 18,000 employees. We have a very, very large contractor base. Approximately 45,000 contractors work with NASA on the NASA mission. And generally our budget is somewhere around $17 billion a year. Geographically, we go, you know, around, I would call it the edge of the United States, starting in Cleveland, Ohio, with the Glenn Research Center, then Goddard, headquarters in D.C., Langley, which is a flight research center, down to Kennedy, which I think people are familiar with from the space shuttle launches, Marshall, where we build engines and rockets, Stennis, where we test them, Johnson, which is where our human spaceflight is located, the astronauts, et cetera, and then working our way up through California to Ames Dryden, which is a research center for aviation, and JPL of Big Bang Theory fame, I think is is their big claim to fame. But and Mohawk Eye.
So, Jerry, would you tell us more about your role as NASA's Chief Human Capital Officer? What are your responsibilities and duties, and how do your efforts support NASA's overall mission?
So as the Chief Human Capital Officer of NASA, I have a really interesting and unique role. So I'm, of course, responsible for overall agency policy, for the overarching executive resources of the agency, and for the IT infrastructure that the human resources business operation runs on. But my most important contribution to the agency mission is the work that I do on workforce culture and ensuring that NASA has the workforce culture, the innovative culture it needs, so that at some point in the future, human beings can travel beyond the moon to Mars, and also so that we can engage in our Earth observation activities related to climate and weather, et cetera. It is interesting because culture and working on culture issues is very, very different than HR business operations. And it can be challenging sometimes to keep that sorted out and really be sure always that the things that you are working on really do address the issue that you're trying to address. But I have to also say that the culture work is, for me at least, by far the more exciting, innovative, creative aspect of the job.
It's also challenging, isn't it? So I'd like to understand some of your key challenges. Could you tell us a little bit about those?
So as we look at NASA culture, people do see NASA as an innovation organization. And truthfully, that's what our mission is. We only engage in work that is either so technically or scientifically complex that the time duration is so long that the government needs to engage in that work. There's not a real strong business proposition. And then once we have solved those scientific and technical issues, we turn that research over to the private sector for commercialization. So in terms of thinking about culture at NASA and what we're focusing on to create that environment of innovation, we really focus in three areas. We focus on connecting our people to each other and the mission, which is challenging in times when travel, training, and conferences are receiving a great deal of scrutiny across the federal government. We focus on building what we call model supervisors, those supervisors that display the attributes that we need to lead NASA into the future. And we focus on recognizing and rewarding innovative performance. So as we work on developing our strategy, as we work on implementing our strategy, which we're doing at the same time, we really try to focus our efforts in those three areas.
So along with these challenges that you've encountered, leading human capital efforts can also be fraught with unanticipated and unexpected surprises. To that end, what has really surprised you the most since taking on this role?
So I've been in my job for like a year and a half, and I feel very, very fortunate that I have the opportunity. I like to maintain that I have the best HR job on the planet or off. One of the things that has surprised me the most, here we have some of the smartest human beings on the planet, literally, and how giving they are with their time and how willing they are to share their story with anyone who is interested in spending time with them. I recently spent a day with a young man who is a laser engineer, and he is working on developing a tractor beam, like on Star Trek. Mm-hmm. And so, this young man who has a laboratory, who's literally working on building a Star Trek tractor beam, just so generous with and patient with his technical explanations and with his time. And that really did surprise me when I arrived. Astronauts, the most generous, thoughtful people you'd ever want to meet. So it has been not a negative surprise, but rather a very, very pleasant surprise to spend your day in the company of, people who really, really think deeply about what it is that they do and really, really care about what they do.
Well, Jerry, you've talked about pursuing a culture of innovation, and that no doubt requires leadership. So in your mind, what are some of the characteristics of an effective leader? And who's influenced your leadership style?
So on the question of who's influenced my leadership style, I've had a long career in public service. I entered public service immediately upon graduation from my undergraduate degree. But I went into the Peace Corps and I went to what was then Zaire. It's now the Democratic Republic of the Congo, where I taught high school English for 2 years. And then I came back and went almost immediately to work for the federal government. So I have, oh gosh, over 30 years of service, even though I am still quite young. And over that time, of course, I had many, many supervisors. Now, sometimes supervisors can be role models, and sometimes they can serve as terrible warnings, and I had a combination. But I do recall about midpoint in my career, I had two supervisors back-to-back, and both of them were gentlemen. One was a crusty old Marine, and they prepared me for the position I am in now in two particular areas that I am very grateful for. The first is always move forward. You cannot do anything about what has happened in the past. It is important to understand the past, to learn lessons from the past, but not to dwell on the past. And always be looking forward into the future as far as your mind will allow you to go. And for me, that's pretty far out. I can think out, you know, easily 10, 15 years. It's not a problem for me. The other thing, and this was the harder lesson and one that took quite a bit longer, was be prepared to receive unjustified criticism. And I call my phrase for this is grow duck feathers, meaning that when unjustified criticism comes your way, let it roll over you, let it wash over you, don't let it waterlog you and drag you down. And these two people who were my mentors and were actually my supervisors gave me a great, great gift when they taught me those two particular attributes and skills.
What is NASA's human capital and workforce strategy? We will ask Jerry Buchholz, Chief Human Capital Officer at NASA, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour. Is there a recipe for successful cross-agency collaborations that are enduring? Or is each initiative so dependent on context and personality that there's no way to offer general principles of success? Well, an IBM Center report by Dr. Jane Fountain, Implementing Cross-Agency Collaborations, a Guide for Federal Managers, offers advice on successful cross-agency relationships. Fountain says there's, in fact, a recipe for success, but it depends on the number of factors. Go to businessofgovernment.org, download Jane Fountain's report, and find out. That's businessofgovernment.org. Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Jerry Buchholz, Chief Human Capital Officer at NASA. Also joining us from IBM is Lori Feller. So, Jerry, in the previous segment, you mentioned the significant operational changes from retiring the space shuttle to transitioning to a new technology that gets NASA beyond low Earth orbit. That requires a flexible and responsive human capital and workforce strategy. Could you tell us a little bit about your vision for that and some of your priorities?
So a lot of people ask me about how NASA is weathering the transition from the space shuttle era to the new NASA. And I am very, very pleased to say that we have made that transition really, really well. We have moved past the shuttle era. The shuttles themselves have gone to their new homes in museums and science centers across the country. And we've worked really hard over the course of the last year and a half to help our employees explore the new mission, to understand where we are going next, to think forward, and to really engage in our new mission. And I have to say that I am just so very, very proud of the NASA workforce. That was not an easy transition for people to make. It was not an easy transition for the agency itself to make or for the agency's culture to make. But we knew we had succeeded when we were ranked the best large agency in the federal government by the Partnership for Public Service, largely based on our scores that our employees gave us on employee engagement. So part of what's going on is really setting up a culture strategy that's in alignment with that new mission, with the new skill set that the agency needs to have in order to travel beyond the moon, and also to support the growing commercial space industry, which is very, very important as well. We work very, very hard on this. We work very hard to ensure that employees know what the new mission is, that all employees can state what the agency's priorities are, and that they have an optimistic outlook for the future. We do this a lot through workforce communications, what I call strategic workforce communications, where there is a top-down approach. But we also do it through activities. We have a lot of activities in the agency that offer employees the opportunity to engage with each other and engage with the mission. And I think that those things, especially in tight financial times, are the things that we really want to make sure that we continue in the workforce.
Jerry, strategic workforce planning and management are critical to ensure that NASA's multi-sector workforce is properly aligned with its current and evolving strategies. Can you tell us a little bit more about your efforts to improve the hiring process throughout the agency in accordance with the priorities of the President's hiring reform initiatives?
So fortunately, I came into an organization that had a really, really good, effective HR business operation running. And that was such good news for me because that told me I didn't have to worry about issues of days and time. You know, we were well within the guidelines in terms of time to hire, et cetera, which is a lot of what the hiring reform initiatives were about. So what we're focusing on now is quality instead of flow. And where we are focusing our attentions are in the virtual environments, social media, virtual recruitment activities, because what we are trying to build at NASA is a multi-generational workforce that represents all segments of society, which is our legal mandate. So as we look forward, we're looking at creating more connection between the NASA workforce and potential employees through the use of social media, to use more virtual environments for recruitment and hiring, and to really focus in on assessment techniques that define quality as opposed to quantity of applicants. We don't have any trouble getting thousands and thousands of people to apply for our jobs. But thousands and thousands of people are not necessarily the best answer. What you really want are a handful of the very, very best people. So that's kind of where we're focusing our attention.
Jerry, NASA is a very complex and diverse, as you said, organization. I'm interested in understanding how you evaluate the HR field performance and make sure that best practices are driven throughout the human capital community in NASA. And what steps are you taking to make sure that happens?
So we have a very, very strong HR community in NASA. Every center, there are 11, every center has an HR director and an operating HR office, and we work together very closely and very, very well. So we do the standard sorts of things. For example, we had a video teleconference to talk about how are we going to recognize innovative performance in the agency when cash awards and bonuses are off the table, making sure that everybody was calibrated to the message and to get ideas from the field regarding our recommendation to the administrator of NASA, how we were going to go about doing that. And we do that regularly, monthly on large topics and even more frequently on more specific narrow topics. I think all of that is very helpful. Certainly seeing people even on the VITs is very, very helpful. The other thing that we do that I think is really, really useful is we have a very sophisticated suite of operations dashboards in what we call our HR portal, which is an online portal that anyone can have access to. There's a section for employees, there's a section for managers, and then there's a section for HR professionals. And that's how we sort of monitor the business operation on a day-to-day basis so that we can keep track of where people are. And if we start to see someone struggle in a particular area, then we reach out to them and figure out how can we assist them in overcoming whatever hurdle has appeared for them. And then, of course, we have our compliance mission, where we visit each of the centers on a regularly scheduled basis to do an assessment of their HR operation and provide them with feedback on how to improve. We rarely find issues when we do those assessments. They really are more about gathering best practices and sharing those across the same HR community. So the focus for us really is, and this is an enviable position to be in, is really beyond compliance and more to quality and sharing of best practices.
So, Jerry, we talk a lot about leadership at NASA, innovative leadership, leadership in terms of culture. Let's talk a little bit about future leaders, because obviously developing future leaders is critical for an agency that has such an important mission as NASA. Can you tell us a little bit about your efforts to pursue succession planning and executive development? What is NASA doing to ensure the continuity of leadership in these times?
So we have two really fabulous programs. The first is called NASA First, which is for high potential employees who have not yet moved into leadership but are exploring leadership as a potential future. And then we also have our mid-level leader program, which is for people who are moving into supervisory positions or who have just attained their first supervisory position and are contemplating becoming an SES. And these programs are our cohorts, and they include a wide variety of learning experiences, classroom learning, on-the-job training, self-directed learning. They include a rotational assignment to an area completely outside your area of professional expertise. They include formal mentoring with an agency senior leader, and they include a cohort project that benefits the agency as a whole. Both programs include all of those attributes. We've put approximately 500 people through those programs over the years that we have had the programs. And we are now seeing people who were in the first NASA First program, then went through the mid-level leader program, are now moving into senior leadership positions in the agency. So remember when I talked about the culture and the attributes of model supervisors, we try to infuse those in beginning with NASA First, because if we can get them early and help them through self-discovery understand the kind of leader that NASA needs for the future, they can work on those attributes and those competencies over a long period of time, and we'll have many, many opportunities to do that. One of the things that I think it's important for us to remember is sometime this last year, this year, or next year, the person who's going to be sitting in my job in 20 years was hired into the agency. So these individuals that are coming into the agency now are the people who are going to be leading the agency when human beings travel to Mars.
Well, Jerry, I'd like to stay on this culture, this conversation around culture, and particularly around results-oriented performance culture. What are you doing in that area to first consolidate and streamline your performance assessment systems? But more particularly, what I'd be more interested in is some of the success stories around building a performance culture or facilitating a performance culture in NASA.
So we've been working on this for easily longer than a year. We have automated both our GS performance management system, and our system is called SPACE because one of the things we excel at NASA is acronyms. But we have also automated, and as far as I know, we are the only agency that has done this, we have automated the new government-wide SES performance management system. So with bonuses, performance bonuses off the table for the federal government, this is really an unanticipated window of opportunity, because we're rolling out a new system and it isn't being confused with a distribution system for the agency bonus budget. It can really be all about managing performance. Our motivation for developing a new system and rolling it out in an automated fashion was to provide more transparency, to ensure that there was a robust performance management system in the agency, and to provide line of sight for employees from their day-to-day duties and responsibilities to the overall big NASA mission. And I think that that's the real value added of a performance management system. So you're really working on two different things here. You're working on long-term career development. What kind of performance feedback can you give to an individual a few times a year that will help them build and grow their career? And how can you help them connect to the mission and really understand very well how what they do helps accomplish NASA's overarching strategic goals? So we've really been working hard on focusing the system on those areas.
What is NASA doing to develop future leaders and pursue a strategic workforce planning approach? We will ask Jerry Buchholz, Chief Human Capital Officer at NASA, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour. Pundits warn about the fiscal cliff, but federal agencies nearly every year hold up the budgetary sky while walking on the edge of a cliff. It's called the world of continuing resolutions and potential government shutdowns. The IBM Center report, The Cost of Budgetary Uncertainty, Analyzing the Impact of Late Appropriations by Dr. Phil Joyce, examines the impact of late budgets on the efficiency and effectiveness of government operations. To find out more about the cost of budgetary uncertainty, go to businessofgovernment.org. That's businessofgovernment.org. Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Jerry Buchholz, Chief Human Capital Officer at NASA. Also joining us from IBM is Lori Feller. So, Jerry, you've mentioned that in building a culture of innovation, your folks in the human capital area really need to change how they do business. Could you tell us a little bit about how you're building certain consultative skills and some strategic human capital skills within your area?
So several years ago, NASA set up a NASA Shared Services Center to take over the backroom operations of human resources. So things like processing of personnel actions, the agency awards, actually, they do a fantastic job with retirement processing and retirement counseling. We have an error-free rate that is the envy of all of the other federal government agencies when it comes to retirement processing. And what this allowed us to do was, by focusing those operations in a shared services center, it freed the operating HR offices up to focus more on culture strategy, development strategy, organizational development across the organization, counseling and consulting with agency leadership on organizational structures and on workforce environment and employee engagement. So over the last few years, there has been a real shift to move the HR operations more in that direction across the agency. In some centers, they have made a very, very dramatic shift. In some of the smaller centers where the HR office is small and they do everything for the whole center, it can be more of a challenge. But one of our very smallest centers, Stennis, in the Best Places to Work, was out of 290 subcomponents of the federal government, second across the whole federal government. I always hold them up as the shining example of how much you can accomplish even if you are small and have very little budget. Sometimes we hear, oh, well, you're NASA. Of course, you can do anything. But the fact of the matter is NASA is comprised of these different organizations that have big ranges in size. And some of our smaller ones are actually very, very successful and very impactful.
That's a great segue, because agencies must have an effective strategy for organizing and retaining its intellectual resources and its institutional memory. Can you elaborate on your efforts to expand and enhance effective knowledge management strategies to retain that knowledge?
Well, as everyone knows, at NASA, we're really big on myth and mythology. And you see it in everything from how we name our missions, Apollo, Gemini, etc. And you also see it, and I mentioned the people who are so generous with their time, in the storytelling that happens at NASA, passing stories along from one generation to the next. And when you become an employee and you start hearing these stories for the first time, because the stories are fabulous, and then you find yourself sharing these same stories with your friends and your neighbors and people in the grocery line who see you're wearing a NASA badge. And it really is a part of our culture. So to capitalize on that, we have been working on a project in my office in conjunction with a chief scientist's office to encourage scientific storytelling. So to enable our scientists to be able to tell the story of their research and how their research benefits all of humankind in layman's terms, in informal settings, so that they can not only explain the NASA mission, but also explain to other people who might not be experts, who might be an expert in a different scientific or technical field, but not in their own field. When you couple all of that with social media and what we have out there now, NASA employees are encouraged to have Twitter accounts and to tweet. I tweet under NASA People, and I'm always looking for followers to discuss the work that they're engaged in and their Facebook pages, to set up YouTube channels and to tell their stories and post them online for all to see. You know, we live in these marvelous, marvelous times where, unlike thousands of years ago, where stories could only be passed from one person to another single person or group of people maybe sitting around a fire, now you can pass your story along to 1,800 people a day. And we've really engaged in that and are really trying to tell this, you know, exploration story and to share our joy of exploration with a very, very broad population of people.
So to keep us going talking about social business and to talk about storytelling, what are some of the best ways that you see to communicate the critical importance of performance management? And to what extent do you see some of the increase in social networking technology, such as blogs and wikis, as tools to communicate the importance of accountability as well as progress and performance?
So we do very much view the performance plan as one of many tools to help connect employees to the mission of the agency by providing them with a direct line of sight between their assigned duties and responsibilities and the expectations that their supervisors have to perform those duties and responsibilities all the way to the big NASA mission. And we do encourage our employees to use social media. And, you know, it's interesting because every once in a while, someone will and be engaged in a NASA mission in a very, very public way. And the end result of that is an unanticipated and completely unexpected outcome. So I am, of course, referring to Mohawk Guy, who arrived at JPL last August to work on console while Curiosity was landing on Mars, and became an overnight internet sensation, was at the State of the Union address, was in the parade, the inaugural parade. He's been on television. He's been everywhere. And by the time he woke up the next morning, he didn't realize that his tweets were now being followed by thousands and thousands and thousands of people around the world. And he also didn't realize that he had received 5 marriage proposals. So being an NASA employee can be a very, very visible experience. We are trying to prepare our employees. You know, you just never know what discovery might happen that you might be participating on. We're a very, very visible workforce. Well, along with that comes some responsibility in terms of public demeanor and being able to tell the NASA story, being able to ask questions, being able to answer questions in a meaningful way. So we do try as best we can to prepare our employees for that.
Jerry, I'd like to talk about the coordination among C-suite leaders within NASA. In particular, how important is it to coordinate and collaborate with the CFO, the CIO, or the chief acquisition officer? And can you tell us how you're doing it?
So, you know how I talked about how people are so giving with their time. One of the other things that's been a big surprise for me is how social work life is at NASA. And for me, that works great. While it is a large organization and has formal structures, and the formal structures are there and they serve their purpose, there is also a very informal quality about the way we interact with each other, particularly between the CFO, the chief financial officer, and myself as the chief human capital officer. And, you know, one of the things that I think makes that possible is by engaging in informal activity in addition to the more formal meetings and activities that we and ceremonies and things that we engage in. So, you know, I'm a kind of a relaxed, casual kind of person. And rather than let the structures change me into someone who is following rigid chain of command and protocol, I pretty much approach my day using the swing by method. So if I have an hour in the day that isn't pre-programmed, I might just wander through. Well, you call it the C-suite. We happen to call it the A-suite. I can't explain why. But I'll wander through and I'll just stick my head in and I'll say, I don't want anything. I don't need anything. I don't need you to sign anything. I just want to say hi. And then there's this immediate relief. And the people will, you know, chat for 2 seconds. The big advantage of this is, you know, I have to ask people to make some hard decisions sometimes. And I come to them with really difficult problems sometimes. By using that method, I have found that when people see me walking down the long, long hall, and you need to know the hall at NASA is an entire city block long. You can see single point perspective as you walk down the hallway. They don't see me coming down the hall and dread my approach because I am just as likely coming by to bring them a piece of cake. I think that sometimes, especially in the federal government, we lose sight of how important those informal relationships and interactions can be to the normal conduct of business. And especially when everything we are doing is being watched by lots and lots and lots of different people. So it's important to do it well, but all I have to say is it really works for me.
So Jerry, whether it's operating in an era of fiscal constraint or in your case, what NASA's doing, transitioning to a whole new sort of new generation of transportation systems, how do you keep your workforce focused and motivated in the face of dramatic and sometimes painful change?
So I mentioned clear priorities. I've talked about that a couple of times, which for us are the James Webb Space Telescope, JWST, Space Station, and SLS and Orion. And, you know, making sure that everybody who works for you understands that those are the agency priorities so that when they see decisions are made and that they are made in that context, they can understand why the decision was made that it was the way it was made. But when we look at cultural shifts and creating cultural shifts in the agency, we try to approach those issues and questions from 4 different angles. The first is having a really well-defined value proposition that is clearly stated that people can read and understand. The second is making sure that people have the skills that they need through training, whether it be formal training or informal training, to behave in the new way that we are expecting them to behave. To make sure that we have support systems, whether that's IT infrastructure or websites or procedures or fact sheets, but there's actually support systems to support the new behavior, and most importantly, modeling of the new behaviors by the senior leadership on down through the agency so that the actions of our leadership match their words. And we find that if we design a program, a process, a procedure, a tool, whatever it might be, even just concept, and we approach it right from the beginning, right through the design phase, we approach the project design from these four angles, that it greatly enhances the probability of success of that initiative, much more so than if you only used three of these dimensions or two or one. We have been having a tremendous amount of success looking at problems this way and developing solutions this way, because it really does get to shifts in mindset. And if you can change people's minds and if you can change people's hearts, 9 times out of 10, or maybe more, their behavior will follow. Mm-hmm. So we're really trying to get in the heads of people and help them see things new ways and behave in new ways, because that's what will result in permanent and enduring change.
What does the future hold for strengthening human capital efforts within NASA? We will ask Jerry Buchholz, Chief Human Capital Officer at NASA, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour. How do leaders direct ambitious change and achieve significant goals? What strategies do they use to overcome opposition and win allies? And how do specific organizational and political contexts affect strategies and outcomes? These are important age-old questions. To help answer them, the IBM Center has released Forging Governmental Change by Professor Harry Lambright. Lambright has identified two premier government leaders, Dr. Robert Gates of DOD and Dr. Francis Collins of NIH, who have led transformations within their own organizations. By all accounts, both men have been effective leaders of change. This report continues the IBM Center's long interest in leadership and transformation. So go to businessofgovernment.org and download Forging Governmental Change, Lessons from Transformations Led by Robert Gates and Francis Collins. That's businessofgovernment.org. There you can download all Center reports and find out how the business of government is not business as usual. Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Jerry Buchholz, Chief Human Capital Officer at NASA. Also joining us from IBM is Lori Feller. Well, Jerry, I have the pleasure of talking to most of my guests about the use of collaboration and partnerships in meeting their mission. How are you at NASA leveraging collaboration and partnerships to meet your mission?
Well, one of the things that I sit on the Chief Human Capital Officers Council of the federal government, and for many, many years, human capital has been on the GAO high-risk list for skills gaps for the federal government. So there was a big project going on. It's actually still going on at the federal government level to address strategies for closing skills gaps with the intention that improvements will be made in this area and that human capital will move off the GAO high-risk list. And one of the areas that they identified through this process was STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math, as a functional group that the federal government needed to give special attention to. So I have had a working group, actually we call ourselves a collaborative, of STEM agencies in the federal government looking at issues of STEM employment across the federal government for the full employee life cycle. We call ourselves a collaborative because we invite all federal agencies with a STEM mission or with a subcomponent with a STEM mission who have an experiment or a pilot that they would like to run, that they would like help with, to come to our collaborative. We bring high-ranking officials from OPM and from the Office of Science, Technology, Policy in to meet, as well as very, very technical experts from OPM to meet with individuals who then, you know, propose their pilot or their experiment, what they would like to accomplish. And then this group of people gives them ideas about how, what they can do, who they can talk to, who they can meet with, who they could partner with that would help their pilot or experiment be successful. We find this model is a little different than the traditional federal government working group, because those groups generally go for broadest inclusion, which is not what we are going for. What we are going for are proof of concept. So we have several really exciting initiatives that are underway right now through this group. I am leading an effort for the federal government on a program that we're calling PSTEMF. So I'm sure everyone's familiar, or a lot of people are familiar, with the President's Management Fellows. What we are doing is working with OPM to establish a STEM track in the President's Fellowship Program to bring scientists, technologists, engineering, math professionals who aspire to technical leadership in the federal government. So running large research projects, heading up laboratories, et cetera, to bring those individuals into the workforce in both greater numbers, but also using the benefits of the PMF program, which is a very, very rigorous quality assessment of the candidate, into the workforce to fill those future leadership jobs that we are going to have across the federal government. Our collaborative is working great, and I think that it is really demonstrates the power of leveraging partnerships like that so that you can create something new and different that has never existed before.
It's really quite exciting. The Partnership for Public Service named NASA the best places to work among large federal agencies. Can you share with us some of your lessons and what you've learned along the way? In addition, what did you learn just from the survey process and are now doing differently as a result of it?
I will tell you that it was a surprise win. Not so much from our perspective, because we worked really, really hard through shuttle transition to make that happen, because that's the survey that this award was based on was during shuttle transition. So we were going through a major transformation of our agency mission, end of a 30-year program, you know, going forward in a completely new and different direction. Many people wrote us off. Many people expected our results to tank. And in fact, that wouldn't be an unreasonable outcome to expect under such difficult circumstances. We worked on it really hard. Some of the things that we did that I think are really, really important, and I think that they're especially important right now. First, we made sure that we told people that their opinion matters, that we want to know what they think because we want to work to make the organization the best organization that we can make it, given our circumstances, certainly, and that we will listen to what they have to say and we will do something about the feedback that they give us. And that, I think, is the most important thing you can say to your workforce, especially in difficult times. The second thing that we did is what I call connecting the dots. So you get feedback from the workforce, you take action on that feedback. I think the step that agencies often forget to take is going back to the workforce and saying, through the survey, you told us that teleworking and working from anywhere and the mobile workforce were very important to you. The other thing is we actually focused on two things. The mobile workforce aspect and our Work From Anywhere campaign and connecting our people through virtual environments. These were two very, very difficult things. The mistake that I see other agencies make is they focus on 12 things. So nothing gets the direct attention that it needs to create the level of influence that you're trying to create in the agency. And sometimes it can be hard to decide on one or two things and pick out of a whole slate of things which two things that you're going to focus on. But my best advice is focus on one or two things that really matter to your workforce. Tell them that their opinion matters and connect the dots back to the feedback that you've received.
So, Jerry, I'd like to turn to the future. Given your role as a NASA Chico, what are some of the government-wide workforce and human capital issues facing us?
We need to be very creative We need to think about things in completely new and different ways. We need to be persistent. We need to sort through really, really difficult problems and questions. But what we can't do is give up. We have to really refocus everyone's attention and keep them focused on the mission and looking forward. And the second thing is, now is the time to really rethink hiring. And I know that sounds like an odd thing to say. But the truth of the matter is, when you have lulls in federal hiring, that's the time to think about retooling, like we are with the President's STEM Fellows. And it's the time to think about how do we approach recruitment and hiring to produce quality in a different kind of way. Because even though it doesn't seem like it now, at some point, federal hiring is going to pick up again. And then we're going to have had this big window where we didn't bring large numbers of people into the federal government. And there's going to be this rush, 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 and we won't have time to retool. So you really have to think about this bathtub in hiring as an opportunity to invest now for future hiring, particularly early career hiring. And it's also a really good time, I think, to invest in leadership development for your workforce. So if you're focusing on those three things, keeping a forward focus, focusing on retooling, hiring, and other processes that in your agency, and focusing on the development of your leaders, I think that that will help people keep a positive perspective, and it will also set you up for success when the business of government starts ramping up again.
Well, I'd like to take this conversation about the future internal to NASA and its new vision for space exploration. How do you envision NASA's human capital changes needs changing over the next 3 to 5 years? And what are you going to do to meet these changes and seize opportunities?
So we're going to focus our efforts very intentionally in two specific areas, and that is on building role model supervisors. So we have supervisors in the agency that no one's ideal, but the idea is that they're, in terms of what we need for the future, they're, you know, the ideal supervisor. They have the attributes we're looking for. They have the skills that we're looking for. And then we have a group of people who want to be a model supervisor, and they just need a little bit of help. They need a little push to get them into that group of people that that we think of as the role model supervisors. So we're going to focus, like rings on a tree, we're going to focus on expanding that core of role model supervisors and growing it every year and expanding the number of people who have the skills and attributes that we are looking for the future. So we have lots of people in the agency that are readily identifiable targets. We have all the individuals who have been through our NASA FIRST and MLP programs, but we also have all the people who were nominated for those programs, but perhaps not selected. So they were among a group of very, very talented people. They themselves are very, very talented people and high potential people. But for whatever reason, the year that they applied, they didn't make the cut, because, of course, we can't put everybody who wants to go through the program through the program. So it's easy to identify this, you know, these rings of people that we can start pulling into the core group. And so we are going to really work hard on that, because at the end of the day, the person who has the most impact on your work and your work-life balance is your first-line supervisor. And if you have really high-quality first-line supervisors that view developing innovative employees as a valuable use of time, then that is going to enhance the mission of the overall mission of the organization and build the kind of workforce culture that we're looking for. The second thing that we're really going to focus on is connecting people to each other and the mission. I've talked about that a couple of different ways. It is really, really, really important right now. We have gone, we plowed through and worked really hard on improving our capability to use virtual environments in the agency. We sat down and we really thought through and we really worked our way through, how do you conduct virtual meetings and give people a meaningful collaborative experience in a virtual environment. And we took this group of people who were very skeptical that this was even possible. And in a 30-day window, because we conducted the summit over a month, the whole month of October, and there were segments that you could, you know, pre-video type sessions you could walk online. There was online training. There were books you could read. There was a wide variety of things. And then there were live sessions that we conducted. So really focusing on meaningful collaborative experiences through virtual working environments. Infuse